If you would, you might be turning to the book of Matthew and chapter 16. Matthew chapter 16. And as you're turning there, let me just say, to reiterate what has been said already in the announcements, it was a good lunch. We enjoyed our time together. And I always am impressed by the willingness and unselfishness of so many to pitch in so many ways to make what would seem to be an arduous task a simple matter. As the old saying goes, many hands make light work. And that was the case today. And especially, we always have the dishes to prepare. And thank you, ladies and men. And we have the cleanup from that. And thank you, those who took care with that. But also today, we were cleaning out the rest of that room to get ready to put the new flooring down. And we did some of it last Wednesday night, some Thursday morning at Donuts, and the rest of it today. And now there's nothing left to be done but for those who are above our pay grade to take care of matters and put a new floor in. But I appreciate all those who did so much to make that possible. And the Lord willing, we'll use you again to put things back as they were. And we'll have a much better situation. And you may have noticed in the back, speaking of new things going on, we have a building project back there. Last week it looked like a set of gallows, but it doesn't look that way now. It just looks like a curiosity. If you are of a adventurous spirit, you might go back there and look inside. Maybe you step up the stairs and you'll realize that you're at the top of Mount Everest looking down from up there. But that is to go with a new sound system. And you might think, well, what's wrong with this one? Well, we have a good sound system. We do. But there's some things that we're tweaking. And also, much of what we're doing has to do with the technology for online things that we're doing on YouTube and Facebook and things like that to get the message here out to a larger audience. We just didn't have the facilities in what we were using to be able to advance to the next level we want to go to in terms of getting the message out. And much of that has to do with that. But if you'll be patient, in just a few weeks, all of this will be in our past and something we just hopefully, as time goes by, come to take for granted. But things should be working out smoother as we go forward. And again, I appreciate your indulgence with all of this. Now, Matthew chapter 16, well, let's begin reading at verse number 21. Matthew 16, beginning at verse number 21. From that time, Jesus began to show to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed, and be raised the third day. Then Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, "Far be it from you, Lord, this shall not happen to you." But he turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are an offense to me, for you are not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men." Then Jesus said to his disciples, "If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me, for whoever desires to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what profit is it to a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul?" And for a bit this evening, we consider that last question. What will a man give in exchange for his soul? Now, the text we just read follows after a fairly familiar one where Christ has promised, based upon the good confession that Peter has made, to build his church. And in the promising of that, he also adds this phrase, "The gates of hell," or Hades, "shall not prevail against it." Not exactly positive in the language if it's it, the church, or it, the building of the church. But regardless, they mean the same. It will not be stopped by hell itself, Hades itself. And really, this is a euphemism for death. The Hadean realm, that realm beyond this one, not hell, Gehenna, but hell in the sense of Hades, that realm beyond this one, where all deceased souls go. This is sometimes a figure of speech used to describe death itself. And so what Christ is saying is, I am going to build my church. And it might seem as if, from the outside looking in, from a human perspective, that the way to kill this entire thing is to put to death the one in charge of it. At the very most, you make him a martyr, and as time goes by and a generation comes and goes, he'll be long forgotten. If you want to squelch the movement, you kill the leader. And Christ says, no, death won't stop it. My church is coming. Now, Daniel had promised back in Daniel 2 that kingdom would last forever, and it's still with us in 2025 as we speak. The kingdom remains. The church is still with us. Death, in terms of the death of Jesus Christ upon the cross, and the death of his apostles and early Christians of saints of situations centuries past us now. All of these matters haven't in any way stopped or inhibited even the church. In fact, in many cases, it's been fuel on the fire of the growth of the church. As Tertullian once said, the seed of the church is the blood of its martyrs. But Christ had just said that when he then begins at our reading this evening by saying, I'm going to go and die. He's just said death won't stop what's about to happen, but then he makes it very clear, I'm about to go and die. It's going to be in Jerusalem. It'll be the hand of the elders and chief priests and scribes. I'm going to be killed, but I will be raised again the third day. And Peter doesn't want to hear about that. He's very much against it. As we would have been if we'd been there with Peter. Problem is, hopefully we would have been humble enough just to keep quiet. But Peter always had to have something to say, even if it was the wrong thing at the wrong time, about the wrong subject, which was the case here. Because what was about to happen was absolutely necessary to heaven's scheme of redemption. Your salvation, my salvation, it even to this day hangs upon what happened there on the cross and the bloodshed there. It had to happen. But Christ hears that and he rebuffs the rebuke of Peter, seeing this as Satan using Peter to get his message across and have temptation come against Christ. But then, having said that, Christ says, the last part of our reading, how if anybody that is intending to come to him, that person must deny himself and take up his cross. Christ has just referenced his own cross. I'm going to go to Jerusalem and suffer many things. Well, how so? He's going to be crucified. The gates of Hades, death itself, won't prevail against the church. How so? Well, Christ is going to be crucified. I've got my cross and my future, Christ is saying. You have yours and yours. And if you are intending to follow me, you have to take that as just the way things are. But the good news is, if you lose your life for my sake, you'll really find it. Because there's something more important than this life. On the other hand, if you try to save your life in denying me, you'll end up losing life that matters. Which then brings up the question, what is a man profited if he should gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Now, from one aspect of this, it looks as if we're talking apples and apples, but we're not. This is truly an apples to oranges situation of comparison, trying to compare this life with the next one. The life in the flesh with life in the spirit. They're not even comparable. One is real and one is not. One is temporal, the other is temporary. They are not compatible at all. And the problem is we, because of this life, see things just opposite to the way they are. You say, well, I know what's real, it's what I see. When the Bible tells us that's the very thing that's not real. Do you remember the last verse of 2 Corinthians chapter 4? While we look not at things which are seen, but at things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, temporary. The things which are not seen are eternal. And he goes on to say in chapter 5, we know that if the earthly house of this tent, this tabernacle, this body be destroyed, dissolved, we have a building of God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. And so there is no comparison between what we have now and what is to come. The real is then, not now. And the temporary is now and not then. And so when you talk about a trade, well, what would you trade from the unreal to give up the real? What would you give up that is eternal for what is temporary? And Christ uses an exaggerated idea. What if one could gain the whole world? The whole world. Now, if we all could take our net worth and put it on a sheet of paper tonight, and I promise you, we'd still have those who are at the top of the list and those at the bottom of the list, because that's the way lists work. But I'll tell you this next. Those of us who have the most of those of us who are here have very little. How much do you have to have a lot? Well, I have to have more than I have now, we think. Maybe what that fella has, that's a lot. I don't have much, but he has a lot. Well, you think about the richest person in the world right now, Elon Musk. He's getting a lot of press. It's not all good, but a lot of press. And I'm not sure, I think he's still the richest, but they're doing their best to make it not that way. But safe to say he has a lot more than you have, a lot more than I have, all put together at times many multiples. But that's not even the whole world. Then you have the idea of a nation like our own. We are a very rich nation. Yes, we talk about the indebtedness we have and the debt we incur. But all being said, we are a very wealthy nation. But we're not the only nation on the earth, and none of us have the entire nation at our disposal to control as we wish. But what if, just what if, you could have everything, everywhere that everyone else already has, and it's yours. The stuff, the money, the currencies, the gold, the silver, the precious minerals, the patents, the coffers of nations, if all of this around the entire globe just happened to be yours, just like that. And trade was, you get that in exchange for your soul, which seems intangible, seems insignificant, seems as if you don't even know you have it. Physically speaking, you don't. But it's what makes you you. In fact, I'll go one step further. It is you, your soul, your spirit, that which is beyond the flesh. And I can prove that to you. Ever known somebody who's lost a limb? After they lost it, were they any less them than they were before they lost it? You have a friend who perhaps lost an arm or a leg, and he comes out of surgery, comes home, and says, well, you're not quite you, are you? Well, no, they're completely them just without the arm or leg. And that's true of every part of you except for your spirit, your soul. You take that away, you take you away. That's what happens at death. But you're not your body. I'm not my body. And many of us can say, thank the Lord for that. We are so much more than our bodies. And so this exchange is ludicrous. And that's what Christ is saying. You should be willing to lose this life if it comes to that in order to hold on to the life which is to come. Because that life is so, so much more important. Turn to number 581 for just a moment. And I think the song says this much better than I can. 581. I'd rather have Jesus than silver or gold. I'd rather be his than have riches untold. I'd rather have Jesus than houses or lands. I'd rather be led by his nail-pierced hand than to be the king of a vast domain or be held in sin's dread sway. I'd rather have Jesus than anything this world affords today. I'd rather have Jesus than men's applause. I'd rather be faithful to his dear cause. I'd rather have Jesus than worldwide fame. I'd rather be true to his holy name than to be the king of a vast domain or be held in sin's dread sway. I'd rather have Jesus than anything this world affords today. Well, interestingly enough, in this text we've just considered, this very idea had come up before in the life of Jesus in this very book of Matthew. If you'll just back up with me from chapter 16 back to chapter 4, Matthew chapter 4, and we'll begin reading together at verse number 1. Then Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. And when he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, afterward he was hungry. Now when the tempter came to him, he said, "If you are the Son of God, command that these stones become bread." But he answered and said, "It is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God." Then the devil took him into the holy city, set him on the pinnacle of the temple, and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down. For it is written, he shall give his angels charge over you, and in their hands they shall bear you up, lest you dash your foot against a stone." Jesus said to him, "It is written again, you shall not tempt the Lord your God." Again the devil took him up on an exceedingly high mountain, and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. And he said to him, "All these things I will give you if you will fall down and worship me." Then Jesus said to him, "Away with you, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only you shall serve." Then the devil left him, and behold, angels came and ministered to him. The devil tells Jesus here, I'll give you the whole world. Now, there is an interesting discussion we could have on a different time about whether he could have come through with his part of the bargain. I know he wasn't telling the truth in what he would have done, but could he have? I don't think so. But there was the offer made. Everything, all the kingdoms, all the glory, everything you can see. As we just described, the idea of the entire world in a nutshell, it's all yours. And there we might say, well, the text are different, because in the one you're trading your soul for all the world. And here Christ is doing something a lot more drastic than that. He is offering to bow down and worship Satan. To have all the world come his way. But it's not different at all. It's the same. What does it mean when you sacrifice your soul? You give your soul away, as it were. It's not a passive thing. And didn't Jesus talk about serving two masters in Matthew 6? Making it clear you can't serve both, but you are serving one. Or the other. And that's what Jesus is making the point of in Matthew 16. If you come after me, you've got to come after me with all you have. Just as we've always supposed to have been able and willing to love God with all of our heart and soul and mind. All of us, lock, stock, and barrel. Just as Paul will say later in Romans 12, we ought to be willing to offer our bodies as living sacrifices. All in. And in the absence of that, there's no middle ground between that and actually worshiping Satan, because that's in effect what's happening. If you don't put your soul first, you put your soul last. If you don't put God first, you worship the devil. It's one or the other. And so that's why these are similar and almost parallel passages. And it is interesting that when Jesus says this in Matthew 16, he's just said something to Peter about Satan. Get behind me, Satan. Now, I'm not saying that the devil was against Peter's will, possessing him as demons would in that day. I am saying that what the devil wanted to happen, to work with and change and mold the mind of our Lord, he was doing willingly through this bad advice from Peter. And when Jesus said, that's an offense to me. That's a big word in the Bible, offense. We sometimes take it very lightly, saying it means, you know, my feelings are hurt. No, that's not what the Bible means by offense. It means something that causes one to stumble. Something that puts one's soul at jeopardy. We should be very careful not to cause offense to our brothers and sisters. Not in the sense that we are concerned about their feelings being hurt. We should be concerned about that, but not to this degree. We're most concerned about doing anything that might cause them to be lost, might cause them to stumble or be offended. But what Peter said to Jesus offended him, because you might put this right along with the temptations in Matthew 4, because the devil, through Peter, is tempting our Lord not to do what must be done for you and for me, for our salvation. But with this idea in mind, back in Matthew 4, Christ had already made up his mind. He'd already said, no, that's not going to happen. I'm, as all of us are, to worship the Father only. I'm not going to worship the devil, even if the whole world is given in exchange. And as we close this evening, you might be thinking to yourself, well, this is a topic that doesn't even apply to me, because I haven't even got any part of the world that I have any control of. I have debt up to my ears, or I haven't got much, and I got an old car, and my house is falling apart, and I don't know what is going to happen next week with the bill collector, or next month with the taxes. I haven't got the whole world. I haven't got close to the whole world. There have been people who have lost their souls over a lot less than the whole world. A lot less. Maybe it's a behavior, a habit, an attitude you just won't give up. Or it's something of this world that's innocuous and harmless on its face, but you've made such a god out of it you can't think about anything else but that. Be it politics or sports or business or whatever, or a job. People have lost their souls over a lot less than the whole world. And the point that these two texts are making is this. We should see things clearly and realize what matters most is not what we can see right now. It's what lies beyond in the hereafter. And everything we do now should be in preparation for then and for there. And not wasted in a scramble for things now that don't even matter because they're not even real. The treasures on earth that moth and rust can corrupt. Treasures on earth that thieves can break through and steal. One more song and then the lesson will be yours. 321. 321. We'll just sing the first verse of this one, if you would. 321.
Jesus the Lord laid his glory aside, sinners to save and made whole. Freely he died our transgressions to hide. What is he worth to your soul? What is he worth? What is he worth? What is he worth to your soul? He died on the tree for you and for me. What is he worth to your soul?
Only you can answer that question for yourself. Only I can answer that question for myself. What is he worth to your soul? If your soul tonight's in jeopardy because you're outside of Christ or unfaithful to him, make things right tonight and come as together we stand and sing.